You're listening to Innovation for Alpha, where we explore everything at the intersection of healthcare innovation and finance. Through our discussions and interviews, we keep you informed and educated about healthcare innovations, next-level venture investing, and everything involving the combination of the two.
Hi, everybody. This is Tobin Arthur with another episode of Innovation for Alpha. And today, I'm very excited to talk to Bill Hack, who is with a company that I think you're going to find particularly interesting. They presented at Pitch Club not too long ago, and we were really impressed and excited about what they're doing. So Kadex Genomics is working on, and I don't know if, Bill, this is a correct characterization, but a diagnostic around stage four, or it's a test around stage four cancer patients. And we're going to get into some of the details of the technology. But Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you for inviting me, Tobin. Pleasure to be here.
Well, it's an exciting field. You guys are working on some very interesting technology, which I'm excited to dive into. We'll keep it at somewhat of a high level, although you guys have materials available that take people as deep as they want to go. I've been browsing through a few things. So you're based in Redwood City. Just give us a little bit of your personal background and then maybe how you came to Kadex.
Sure. So I've been in the life sciences industry since the late 90s. Started off at a little tiny company called Genentech. At the time, actually, it wasn't very big, and we had no oncology products. And I was fortunate enough to be there when we launched our first several oncology products, and really the company's since become known as, well, there are many fields, but particularly around their oncology portfolio. So I was very fortunate to be involved in that. Launched several products, and my particular background is economics, and I was involved with a lot of the commercial areas there, sales force sizing, sales force effectiveness, strategy, and got involved in molecular diagnostics there when we did a economics assessment of when these diagnostics make sense to partner up with a drug that's now called companion diagnostics. And little did I know that I would actually eventually get really up to my eyeballs in molecular diagnostics when I joined a bunch of folks from Genentech, went over to a company called Genomic Health, which if you've been unfortunate enough to have breast cancer, you very likely have been oncotyped. So I was there very early on, and I absolutely fell in love with diagnostics. It's very, very patient-centric, and you get very close to patients. Unlike drugs where you're a manufacturer, here, you're really speaking with individual patients, understanding their individual circumstances. And so I've been in molecular diagnostics ever since. At Genomic Health, and then a short stint at Invitae, then over to OncoCyte, and then founded, along with a couple of other chaps, where I'm at now, Kadex Genomics.
I love that characterization. I've never heard somebody describe that closeness with patients with respect to diagnostics versus therapeutics. That's very cool. Let's talk a little bit about the genesis of Kadex. So how did it come about? You've talked about there's some other folks you partnered up with. How did you guys come up with the idea? Where did the science come from?
Sure. So it was very serendipitous, actually. I was at OncoCyte at the time, and we were having trouble validating our assay. And I was doing some side work, pro bono, really helping some physicians at UCSF get Medicare coverage for their lung cancer test, which OncoCyte eventually acquired. But at the time, they were still independent. And in the process of working through that, I was introduced to a molecular a molecular chemist, really, who had developed our technology. And so we got to talking and we decided to form a company. And so we formed KDEX Genomics, filled in the team, and off we went, raised some capital. And it's been now 3 years and running. He really, this gentleman really had developed the technology to a point where we really felt like we had something that could measure tumor burden. Mm.
You know, for people not familiar with UCSF and Stanford, just in terms of the commercial output, it's really extraordinary. You know, when I hear you interacting, obviously, with folks at UCSF, it just comes to mind just how much innovation is coming out of those institutions. It's really remarkable.
It is. Now, I should say that our technology did not spin out of UCSF. That's what's kind of ironic. While I was working with the UCSF doctors,
the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon
creation. Yeah, exactly. So one person connected me with another. This technology actually came out of Tulane University, New Orleans.
Wow.
And that's where our particular chief science officer who developed the technology is from New Orleans.
That's really cool. And it's interesting you mentioned that because Tulane, LSU, there's a lot of interesting things coming out of that part of the country. They have a great biotech incubator there in New Orleans. We've spent time there. We've gone to conferences there. Some of our advisors are on the board. And so, again, sort of an unknown group that for sure nobody understands how much innovation is coming out of there. So that's pretty neat to hear. Let's just touch on the science for a second, give people a little bit of a background on the KDEX genomic assay. Explain just a little bit what it's doing for this process and coming up with early determination of whether a drug is effective or not.
Sure. So the concept behind our technology is actually really simple and easy to understand. So when tumors when cells die and cells, normal cancer cells, they all die. There is a continuous process of cell renewal. And when those cells die, the DNA in every cell, virtually every cell, has a full complement of DNA in them. And when they die, that DNA is shed into the blood. And that's known as CF or cell-free DNA. And with the various technologies like PCR or next generation sequencing, we can detect that DNA in the blood. And so, and those are often referred to as liquid biopsies. I'm not a particular fan of that term, but that's what it is. I'd prefer to call us a blood-based assay. And so what we're doing is we're really interrogating the patient's blood to determine if their tumor is growing. And so what we exploit is really two very important characteristics of this cancer-based cfDNA. One is that tumors, as they grow, shed more cfDNA into the blood. And so it's in many ways, an indicator of the size, the amount of cfDNA in the blood is an indicator of the size of the tumor. Now, every tumor sheds a different amount of cfDNA. So what we do is we do a blood draw before the patient starts to receive therapy or a new block, if you will, of therapy. And then what we do is we measure the blood after the next cycle of treatment. And we can determine if the tumor grew or not after they've received that cycle of therapy. So we need a baseline to get the baseline amount of cfDNA. And then if that baseline essentially goes up, if that amount of cfDNA goes up, it's an indicator that the patient's tumor has grown and the therapy is not working. And that's really the simplicity of how our test works.
Well, it's incredible because in that simplicity, there's such an important problem there. You guys talk about, and you highlight the fact that as these treatments and regimens are happening, the timeline to determine whether they're having an effect is extensive today in the current standard. Talk a little bit about that current, you know, the current process by which somebody with stage four is going to go through treatment, and then how you guys anticipate with success this starts to shift that pretty significantly.
Sure. So probably the best way to really explain that is to take it from the perspective of a patient. So, you know, imagine you've just been diagnosed with, let's say, colon cancer, and the physician says, you know, based on your tumor, the prognosis is that you have patients with your tumor type live typically 6 months, but we can extend that to maybe 12 months, 18 months with treatment. And so the physician asks, do you want to move forward with treatment? Most patients do. And then the physician tells you, you know, the treatment is very toxic. It'll likely make you sick. There'll be side effects, potentially adverse events. And off you go. So you visit the doctor's office. You're in the chemo chair. You get your chemo. You come back for your follow-up visit with the physician and you say, doctor, is it working? And the physician says, we have no idea if it's working yet. It's going to take another 12 weeks before we can tell you whether it's working. And so you go through 12 weeks of this, maybe a visit to the emergency room with an adverse event. You've been very sick. You start receiving bills from your payer for copays, deductibles. And at the end of that 12-week period, the physician does another image, so it's done using imaging, typically CT scans. The physician says, well, your treatment's not working. Your tumor has grown. And so obviously you're very disappointed. And the question is, what's next, physician? And the physician says, well, we'll go ahead and we're going to try another therapy. And you go through that again. And that happens thousands of times across the US and around the world. And we think we have a solution to greatly reduce the anxiety and the amount of toxicity delivered to patients, both the toxicity from the treatment and, of course, the financial toxicity. So we compress that time from 12 weeks down to just 12 days and a single cycle of treatment.
Well, in addition to the benefits that you just mentioned, of course, you're also making much faster iterations. So, you know, if the treatment wasn't working effectively, you're moving on to plan B, which hopefully does, you know. So there's some enormous advantages there. Let's talk a little bit about the state of the company. So you guys have accomplished a lot in a very short period of time. Why don't you just give a little highlight of some of those milestones, and then we'll talk about some of the milestones that you're working to hit with this next series of funding.
Sure. So yes, we've got three studies under our belt at this point. We've done a couple of kind of what I would call almost proof of concept studies. The first proof of concept we did with Jewish General Hospital up in Montreal, and that data has since been published in Surgery. And what we did is we simply, again, proof of concept. And what we wanted to do is show that we were, in fact, with our assay, being able to measure tumor burden, and we could distinguish between patients who did not have cancer versus patients who did have stage four colon cancer. And is there a distinction between patients who had been treated versus patients who had not been treated? And we had an area under the curve of 0.989, which is, if you're familiar with biostatistics, very, very, very good. And so we were very confident at that point that, you know, that the test was measuring what it intended to measure. So the next study that we did was with Dr. Scott Kopetz at MD Anderson in Texas. And in that study, we used archived blood along with the results. So he had collected blood at various intervals and then treated patients and imaged them. And we were able to, with Dr. Kopetz, show that we could identify patients with 100% specificity who had after a single cycle of treatment had their therapy had progressed. And so obviously, you know, with those results, we were very excited to conduct our own study. And so then the next step was, and now the problem with that study was that the blood was collected in under circumstances that would be very, very, very hard to replicate in a real commercial setting. The blood was collected on site, spun down to plasma, then it was shipped to us frozen on dry ice. Probably not practical in a commercial setting. So the next step was to conduct a study that was done under real world circumstances. And we've since analyzed 66 of those patients that we've enrolled in that study. And we ran into a very disappointing problem. And the blood that was being shipped lysed. And this is the problem with cfDNA and our technology, the approach that we took with our technology, which is rather than looking at cancer that was specific from tumors, where you're looking at these individual mutations, very expensive, long turnaround time. We wanted to do something that was far more less expensive, far more analytically sensitive. But the problem is, our results were conflated with white blood cells that had lysed in the blood, contaminating it. And so we had a number of false positives and a number of issues. So we had to go back to the drawing board and make it more specific for cancer. And what we did is we exploited an increasingly well-known fact. There's increasing number of studies that are done, and ours certainly demonstrates this, that you can filter out non-cancer-related cfDNA, blood included, by looking at these very, very short fragments of DNA. For reasons that I won't get into here, cancer cells fragment at much shorter lengths. And so we modified the assay. And again, in this study, we achieved 100% specificity after we made that modification to the assay. So we were able to remedy that problem and have a very, very sensitive assay that really is safe to use in a real world clinical setting.
It's really cool to hear the process where it's not a straight line. You're having to, like, you know, any significant new advancement, zig and zag and follow the science. And specifically, was that zeroing in on the REs? Is that where that process?
Right. So, no, we always were looking at REs, the retrotransposable elements. And that's what makes our assay so incredibly analytically sensitive, because these retrotransposons, there's 1,800, the ones we're looking at, there's 1,800 copies per cell. So it makes our assay, we can detect down to, as Sudhir Sinha, our chief science officer, says, our limits of detection are less than the amount of DNA that comes from a single cell. It's really remarkably sensitive.
That's amazing. So you zeroed in, you've got some things figured out, but still work to be done. Talk a little bit about some of those key initiatives and milestones that are on the drawing board.
Sure. The two key milestones that we have are, one, we do have an algorithm behind it. It's a very simple algorithm. It's a logit model. But we do want to train this logit model on a larger data set to make sure the coefficients in the model are as accurate as possible, to make sure our sensitivity is as high as we possibly can, and to maintain a specificity that is at or near 100%. So that's the first step. And then the second step is we need to train, or we need to validate that algorithm and the assay on a completely independent data set. And only then would we feel comfortable offering this to cancer patients, where decisions, you know, are being made that impact a patient's life. It needs to be that, you know, that assay needs to be validated. And so those are really the two big next steps that we hope to achieve in this round.
So all things being equal, what would you estimate? What's the kind of timelines you're talking about? Is this a 6 months, 12 months, 18 months longer? Just give some people a general idea.
Yeah, we actually think we can have this product on the market late Q1 of next year. That's a stretch, but certainly in Q2 of next year. So it's really not. The beautiful thing about the study design and this particular intended use is it's very quick to validate. It's not like a drug study that takes years on end. This can be done very quickly and right. relatively inexpensively.
Well, and let's tie that a little bit to the business opportunity. So for people that are, you know, getting financially involved in the company, talk a little bit about the outcome for diagnostics like this. What's the market look like? What do you hope to accomplish? Again, not from the scientific and a patient perspective, but just from a pure, you know, for people putting capital into a company like this, what are they hoping to achieve?
Sure. So this is a remarkably large market. Diagnostic markets in general tend to be fairly small compared to drugs. And that's because often diagnostics are sort of a one and you're done situation. The company I was involved with at Genomic Health, when I was at Genomic Health, the test we were involved in, Oncotype DX Breast, it was one and done. You have cancer, you get tested, you profile the patient's tumor, and that's it. And in this situation, we're looking at a monitoring setting where we're at regular intervals monitoring the patient to see if their therapy is continuing to work. And in addition to that, instead of it being this very narrow market where you're looking at, let's say, just ER-positive breast cancer, in the case of Oncotype DX, here we're looking at potentially all therapy types. All therapy types and all tumor types.
Right.
So we've already studied the test against lung, colon, and breast cancer, and it certainly seems to work in all three. We believe it'll likely work in all solid tumors, and particularly and potentially in some liquid tumors. So. So it's a really big market, and we conservatively estimate worldwide about a $3.5 billion market opportunity. And I say that is conservative.
And that's a market that's growing. I mean, pardon the pun, but it's, you know, the population as it's getting older and for a variety of reasons, you're getting a bigger addressable audience too.
Yes, for good and bad reasons. You know, it's nice that populations are living longer and
right.
Aging, and so that certainly grows the market. But patients are living longer with cancer in yeah. part because we have more therapies, and with that, there's more opportunities to monitor people. And then in markets outside the U.S. As they grow more wealthy, cancer is related to age, and markets that grow more wealthy tend to also age. They have fewer kids and they tend to get older because they live longer. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, this is a very rapidly growing market.
So we talked a little earlier about a couple of the needs of the company. You're raising capital. I want to talk about that. And also looking for additional sites in which to test that. Can you just walk us through, so somebody listening who may find this compelling sees the opportunity from an investment perspective, let's give them some details that would pull them a little bit further. And same thing true for the large network of oncologists that are part of our network.
Sure. So yes, we're always looking for study sites. It's a simple study that we're doing in many ways. We're collecting blood and we need some basic information about the patient. The most important piece of data being what were the imaging results at their, you know, 8 to 12 week period yep. after they've, you know, so we aren't asking physicians really to do anything different other than take two blood draws prior to treatment. And at that 12 to 21 day mark before the patient gets their second cycle of treatment. And that's so we're looking for more sites. We want to validate the assay in colon cancer first, and then we'll continue on and validate the assay in lung and breast. So anyone out there who's who is interested in their clinic, hospital being part of our study, we would love to speak with you. And then capital, obviously this costs money. Most of the money is going directly into the lab to run samples and to pay for patient enrollment. Up till now, members of the company have received no compensation. It's all, all non-compensated. At some point, we would like to start drawing some salaries. My savings are starting to dwindle. So some, eventually, once we raise sufficient capital, we'll start paying people as well. But yes, right now we're looking to close out our $1.5 million round. It's a rolling close, and we're zeroing in on $1 million now, and we're looking for another $500,000. We'll go over that if there's interest. And then after that, sometime next year, later this year, we'll expand into another round where we'll use that money to validate the assay and then start the commercialization process. We think that next round, which would be about a $10 million round, that should get us all the way to Medicare coverage. We've already had a conversation with Medicare. And we've had a conversation with a number of payers, and reimbursement for this product, as you can imagine, will not be a problem. Cost saving from this test. It's hard for a payer not to get excited about those prospects. So yes, that's where we're at.
No doubt. Well, you've got an exciting 12 months ahead, Bill. It's a great company. Great mission. Appreciate you spending time today and sharing a little bit more what you're doing. We're going to put information in the show notes so people can reach out to you and your team and get engaged. And we look forward to following you, more importantly, helping you in any way we can to see this thing to a successful conclusion.
Well, thank you very much, Tobin, for your time. It's been a pleasure. And if anyone's interested, I'd be happy to share more information with them.
Great. Well, thanks again.
Okay. Thank you.
See you again soon for the next episode of Innovation for Alpha. Make sure to go to Innovation for Alpha for access to prior episode links, show notes, and other valuable resources. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any investment decisions, please consult with a professional. This show is copyrighted by Angel Indie Media, and written permission must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.